Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2797. That's 2797. I'm Carol Levine. I am Vice President of NASCA. And this show is sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And that's who we are, okay? The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. We're all over the world now. We've had people calling from all different places, different countries, and certainly they get on also, other places on our website and so forth. So we go back and forth, back and forth. It's turned into a really big organization. And we deal primarily, with recovery, prevention, intervention, and recovery. I'm going to read the mission statement and talk a little bit about that because it's so, so important. This is our mission. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one, educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, I usually zero in on the prevention, okay, because I do believe that we as a society, in our neighborhoods, also in our communities, if we become more active and proactive with understanding even the signs of abuse, and then just simply making a phone call, okay, a phone call. If you don't want to call someone in your local area because you're afraid of retaliation, if you're in urban areas, whatever the case might be, you call the 1-800-4-A-CHILD number. I've had them on the show I don't know how many times. They're through Child Help. I trust them. I called them at 2 a.m. They gave me the right answers, and so I always promote them. In fact, I promote people and organizations that I truly believe in, and certainly that's one of them. Okay, now, tonight we have John Anderson. He's here. He's here right now. And John, what state are you from again? I always forget. John, are you there?
Yes, I'm from Louisiana, New Orleans.
Oh, Louisiana. Yes. Okay. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
If
however,
my phone should go.
Can I tell you one thing? I have to drop just for a minute, but I promise I will call right back. I have a slight emergency with the client. Okay?
Oh, I will okay, call no you problem. Right back. Okay. Okay. And then we also have Deborah Schleck, okay? And she is a pastor, and she grew up all over the world in a military family where her mother was, and she was mentally ill, her mother, and is now a survivor professional living in Pensacola, Florida. She's trained in ministry and mental health, working with substance abuse, and is a trauma-informed social worker, all in one. She volunteers with many community organizations. We can talk a lot about that, too, what she actually does. Tonight we're going to start out, me being the night owl, yes, I get all kinds of telephone calls, and of course, with not only just with the holidays that are coming up, but also, too, you know, the world that we live in is not an easy world to live in. And quite frankly, I get people who call me 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock. I was up until 7 o'clock the other day. That's crazy. It's a good thing I took a nap before. I don't know. But anyway, then I went to bed. I took my shower, and then I went to bed. But the point is people are having a hard time this time of the year. And maybe there's all different reasons, because they're going to parties or, you know, family gatherings. There's people there they don't want to see, and for good reasons. Maybe a couple of them were their abusers, or one was their abuser. And people often ask me, do you think it's a good idea if I go to, say, Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinner? And I can't answer questions for people like that, but I can tell you this. There's been times when I worked in a soup kitchen rather than sit across from someone who views me, and I've done that a couple times in my life because it just makes me too sick. I want to smack them. Okay, I can't help it. But, you know, the point is people have to handle that part on their own, because to me, if people are going to go into an atmosphere that's toxic, And have their whole night spoiled because the abuser is there. And most of the abuse that goes on comes from people in the home or people that we know very close to the home. Okay? That's where most of the abuse comes from. And then you have the other people outside, like the neighbor down the street or whatever. You have to be really careful today. It's worse now. All the stats have gone up. Every single one of them. And unfortunately, people aren't thinking too much about child abuse because they're too busy about, am I going to have food on the table? Look at the prices of gas. And rightfully so, all right? Look at this, look at that, look at this, look at that. I could go on and on, but I'm not going to get political because I'm not allowed to. So otherwise, I'd talk for 2 hours on that one, believe me. But the truth of the matter is that people have a right to feel anxious right now. You know, there's reasons for it. We never know what's going to happen tomorrow. So they call me up because they're having flashbacks, they're having anxiety attacks. They know that I used to have panic attacks, which is a little different than anxiety, and things like that. So they call me up, and we have long conversations. It's because of that that I chose this article for tonight. I'm glad that the pastor is here. We're going to, you know, discuss that. And then also, too, we'll get into a little bit more of what she does, because maybe people should know that, okay? So I know she's told her story before. I don't know how long ago you did that, Deborah. Do you?
No.
But, you know, sometime in the future, you know, maybe you'd like to tell your story. We had, Dr. Romo on, was it last night? I wasn't here because I'd gone to physical therapy, and I was aching, so I didn't come on the show. But I heard that he did a fine job, that, you know, so every once in a while we use our own people because we have stories too. Oh, yes, we do. Okay, so first of all, I found this information very quickly before the show, and it's very interesting for those people out there who suffer from PTSD, okay? And there are almost 8 million people, known people, I'm going to say known people in the United States who have PTSD. Now, not all of it's reported. So, but this is what the facts are showing. This is from 2018 to 2020. So it's very current. More women than men develop PTSD. Number three, it can take a long time for PTSD to begin, or it can happen a couple weeks after some traumatic event. All right? That can be anything. It doesn't always have to be sexual abuse. It could be other things, other types of abuses, or maybe something that you saw. like with the soldiers, after World War One, this is when they used to call it shell shock. And now they consider that to be PTSD, what they see. What they see is what, you know, they end up having nightmares, they have anxiety attacks, all the same things that those of us who have been abused sexually or physically, mentally, emotionally, like we speak about on the show, okay, and neglected. The things that we go through, the feelings are the same as a soldier who is in the front line of war. Okay, so if you can get it from different ways is what I'm saying, all right? But when you have it, you've got it. So let's see, men and women can have different types of symptoms. Women tend to be much more emotional. I'm going to get to the to the pastor for this. I always call her like a doctor because she knows a lot. But anyway, you know, they do have different types of symptoms. Men will go out, they're more apt to be the ones to go out and drink and maybe even do other drugs. And I consider alcohol a drug because anything that changes the way that you normally behave, especially in a negative way, that's why I look at it as a drug. And but anyway, they tend to get more into things like that, where women have meltdowns, you know, they get very emotional and don't quite know why they're feeling so emotional. But they have, you know, all kinds of problems like that. So that's the differences with the PTSD between men and women, okay? Children, too, can have PTSD, okay? And that was first recognized as almost some years ago that children also, too, have PTSD, and they go through heck until they force themselves to look at their PTSD. And that's what you do with a therapist. Very good and very important to have, you know, to face your fears, to face your demons. Because if you do that, if you face your demons and you talk about it with someone who's trained in PTSD and in child abuse, or just plain a therapist also too, who's trained in PTSD, you're more apt to heal a little bit more quickly. And you'll learn ways to get rid of triggers, how to deal with triggers when they come, and so forth. It can be a smell. It can be visual. Anything like that, okay, can cause PTSD and trigger it, okay? So that's something to know. And there's no shame there, okay? There's no shame there. Not for us. And it says any cause can cause PTSD. Near-death experiences that maybe you happen to witness, natural disasters. Hey, when we had the tsunamis in our world, you know, that's a natural disaster, whatever. And of course, child abuses. Estimated that 7 or 8 people out of 100 will develop PTSD during their lifetime. You must have PTSD, like I said earlier, for a month for a doctor to actually make that proper determination and diagnosis, okay? And so there's a lot to be said about it, and about 3 to 15% of girls who are traumatized develop PTSD, and boys are 1 in 6. Now, there's a difference there. Again, more girls, more women, okay, suffer differently and suffer from PTSD. But still, 1 in 6 is enough, okay, for boys. So what do you think about what I've said so far, Pastor? I have a lot more here. So we'll get into it in a couple of minutes. But I want your feedback on so far on what I've said, what I've learned tonight, too, just from doing some research.
Yeah, you've learned a lot. That is wonderful. That's
mm-hmm.
one thing that anybody who's had a trauma of any kind, childhood, war, as an adult, there is, if they learn and study, listen to, we'll say, professionals, talk about, they do get symptoms, you know, of how do you know if you're having this sort of a self-diagnosis. And there's a lot of books. There's a lot of personal stories out there. There's a lot of self-help books. There's I'm sure you can Google PTSD on YouTube or Google, and they'll give you definitions and some. Mm-hmm. So it really helps. It's something, maybe you don't have any memories of anything, but something starts happening, that you go do some research like you did, Carol, and you find out tons of stuff. And then you can start going, huh, I have been feeling like this for the last month, and I don't know, everything was fine, and all of a sudden, boom, something happened, and I don't feel like myself. So education is vital, and that is so relevant. What you learn some things today. Your professionals, your therapists, your people who are in the helping profession, they spend a lot of time studying, learning, reading scientific journals, reading study groups, reading ancient history, Freud, how it was diagnosed. They read about all the biological things that happen. They study memories. So they get a real good idea sort of what's going on. And usually nowadays with, we'll say, the Internet, and you can, MDs on there and doctors and stuff, you don't have to go to Encyclopedia Britannica to find out anything. It's all online. Mm-hmm. But a lot of patients don't really want to know what's happening. They're not, they don't have that desire to see what's wrong with me, They wanted, my father was the type, I'll just go to the doctor. I just know I'm not feeling good. Look in my eyes, down my throat. Give me a magic pill.
Yeah.
But don't make me do anything or change my life or tell me to read anything or, just a magic pill. My mother was the type, we ain't talking about family stuff. Nobody's going to ask me any personal questions about my life. It ain't going to happen. So, but my dad was the magic pill type. Then I see other people, they deal with issues by alcohol, drugs. Bingo. Let's just have fun and be entertained and take our mind off of it. But they don't go and look like you did before the show. Like, what is this? What does it mean? Am I in the category? I'm a certain age. I'm a certain sex. Maybe I'm no sex. Maybe I'm a trans sex. So, and therapy really doesn't educate you a lot, like what you presented tonight. You won't get that in a handout from the therapist, okay? The therapist just sort of wants you to explore your feelings, maybe some of your memories. How do you feel about that? How should you feel about it now? More about your feelings. And if your feelings, you can't control one, let's get you some medication. There's medication for everything. And, kind of get on with life, Do the best you can. And they're really not a very educating type of people. Even if you go to the doctor, Carol, and he says you got high blood pressure, they don't give you a book, statistics, handout, Xerox copies, and say, we want you to go and study all about blood pressure and diet and sodium and sugar and your weight and what you eat and why you need to get off the salt. Most patients, we'll call them, they don't want to know. They don't want to do all that studying. They just want to feel better. They just want whatever's irritating them they just want it to go away. But they don't want to change their life. They don't want to change their life. They don't want to give up the salt. They don't want to lose weight. They don't want to give up the sugar. They want to just do what they want to do. And they think, by going to a therapist, there's a lot of people, they go to therapists, but they don't do any work. They don't journal. They don't read anything. They just Oh, well, you know, they just come in and they, I guess, expect the therapist to fix them somehow, you know, something like that. So, and if you're a healing professional, somebody trying to help somebody, like what you did tonight, you have now educated yourself on post-traumatic stress more than you probably even knew before.
Right.
So now when you talk to somebody on the telephone, you got a lot more information that you can ask them questions, and you can start putting them in categories, okay? And, you know, you start to get a bigger picture. Like, say for a female, when they go through the change of life, hormones are changing. We hear about women who have postpartum depression. Hormones are changing. And so sometimes it's strictly a hormonal change that's going on in the body that is affecting the feelings, the thoughts, the energy level, everything like that. After a baby's born, the mother feels great responsibility. Baby wasn't ready for a changed life. And I have to give up this, and I have to get up early in the morning for a baby crying. I don't get to stay out late. And they have feelings of sadness because my life is over, as it was. And throw on top of that, maybe the husband or no husband. Maybe they don't want the baby now. Well, well. And then you throw in all the hormonal changes with pregnancy and then after pregnancy. And people don't understand, you know, the average person does not understand that. So you did a wonderful thing by studying. So a helping profession, which NASCA is, and like you and the people that are on the contact list, need to be very educated, have a lot of resources for people to read, videos to watch, go here, Google this, look this up. Talk, you know, do the doctor online or something. So they themselves can get basic information because, you know, it is more helpful if you have an informed client, we'll say. And you can, and they're working in partnership with an educated therapist. Now, a lot of therapists won't like that. Okay, because they want to be seen, believe it or not, I'm the savior, I got all the answers, I am the adult, the mature, unabused, untraumatic person. Problem is, a lot of them have been abused and they just don't recognize it. But they want that designation, and a lot of traumatized, abused children grow up and actually go into social work because they realize I needed help and nobody was there to help me, so I'm going to go into it to help other people like I should have been helped. But they don't realize when they start hearing the stories of the details, whether it's hypnosis or trauma or whatever it is, they get re-traumatized themselves. And
let me stop you there for a second because what you're just saying is spot on. Well, one part of the article that I was reading, I really have an awful lot on this this article that I read. But
that's good.
One of the things that, well, and I do that anyway before any show. I do that because I like to have my own library, you know, of things. I did a lot of courses, had to, otherwise I couldn't have kept my jobs. But I continued to study on my own. That's what I do. But anyway, all right. But what's going on here, too, you just said something that's very valid. A lot of times, first responders, they see awful things, and they will suffer from PTSD because of what they see. And those, even in the social work field, sometimes they'll get a client. I was drawn to social type work, absolutely, and had to take many courses. Otherwise, I'd be thrown out of the job. But anyway, and they sent me to school, so I didn't have to pay for it. But anyway, the point is this. People who work with people. Now, I was laughing the other day, one of the shows that I ran, because when I worked at Greystone, a lot of those, you know, a lot of the shrinks, as they call them, you know, they had their own people to go and see because they were dealing with so much, all right,
uh-huh.
so much pain, so uh-huh. much suffering, you know, so much with all the different types of mental illnesses that actually
uh-huh.
they would go and get help too, the psychiatrists.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm speaking about.
Well, it's a form of a briefing. The military does it. You go out on an airplane mission and you're in battle. When you
mm-hmm.
finish, you land your airplane, everybody comes back and they debrief, they tell somebody, this is what happened, this is who we lost. Now, men and women deal with trauma differently. A man is a helper, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He's able to compartmentalize differently. He will kill somebody, okay? And he will
mm-hmm.
push it aside. It won't bother him as much because that's the helping part of him. The female helps and is more emotional, more loving, life-giving. You know, life comes out of her. They approach helping differently. And what happens to the different sexes is you have to understand the different hormones and how the body's, what side the brain is working on, how memories are stored, how, like, if you're in the military, you are highly trained to set everything aside, get the job done. And you're able to put back in the back of your head and never really remember it, never bring it up, the things you had to do in war. Okay? But, and
mm-hmm.
that was how they were trained. But a female doesn't get that training. She's much more emotional, emotionally involved. She's involved in giving birth. She is the sort of the other side of the man who cannot give in to his feelings. He's out fighting dragons and lions, even at work. When you're the top dog, it's a dog-eat-dog. You're in dogfights and fighting to make money, to bring it home to the family. You have to live in a world where emotions cannot control you. It's like going into battle. You have to defeat the enemy. You've got to make decisions, fire people. You're at work longer. You're trained. So the man is trained to go out and deal with bad stuff and it not really bother him.
Mm-hmm.
A female is different. Now, as a child, though, until that is really formed based on how the parents treat you, if you're raised by a mama and don't really have the male component, they kind of get lopsided, okay,
mm-hmm.
in your how you handle life. And because then you're not prepared for what's in the schools, the bullying, the fighting, okay? You're not tough, you know, and stuff. So education really is vital to everybody. It'd be like if you were going to have some type of surgery, don't you think you'd want to know what they're fixing to do, what kind of training the guy had, how many surgeries he does, what his recovery going to be like, how long? But some people, they don't want to know anything. Just do it. Give me the pain meds and, you know, leave me alone. So when you're helping people, you have to learn very quickly. Are they one that wants education? There's so much education. Human trafficking, it's all over. That doesn't change anything, does it?
No.
It won't stop the Super Bowl and all the big wigs, and it doesn't stop the drug cartels. Okay, they know what's going on. It doesn't stop mm-hmm. human trafficking in the brothels in Taiwan and China and Japan. It doesn't stop it. Okay. All right. The federal government, they're all aware of it. The UN, everybody's aware of it. They know that people are smuggled for labor so businesses can hire people at a very low. They know that. But they think by people being educated, they'll do something. They'll pass a law. Well, we got laws. It's illegal to do child abuse, isn't it? But that doesn't stop people. They don't care. So education is vital if you're a helper. It does help
mm-hmm.
if you're trying to get healed. but you can get healed with no education about it. All you have to have is the desire. I want to be healed. There's something wrong with me. Now, I don't know what it is. I don't know what these problems are. And a lot of people do, Carol, have to go first to a medical doctor and have all their blood work done. Because
right.
there could be a chemical imbalance or something. Or a hormone is off. Or their thyroid is not working right.
Mm-hmm.
Or they got diabetes or something. So a thorough medical always needs to be done first. And then if everything's balanced and all these issues and these feelings are there, now you're dealing with thoughts and concepts, repressed memories that will break through, you know, with triggers. And it's sort of like education is vital. So that's what you did, what NASCA does, and which is so necessary. Okay.
Well, you certainly do have to know, you know, what you're talking about in the AM, especially. Sometimes I get people, I know they're suicidal. I know it, all right? And one night I was so sure, I actually had my cell phone, which I just shoved in my drawer because it's always going off. But and I turn it off. But anyway, oops. Okay, there we go. That's better. Anyway, I will use the cell phone on the side and call 911 if I feel like the person, and I already have, I've talked to them, spoken to them enough, interrogated them enough, if you want me to put it that way, where I know where they're from, I have a good idea where their town is, and I had to do that twice. One was with a 17-year-old girl, and she evidently was following NASCA, okay? And I'm on the contact list, so she called me, and she was a girl that was in foster care, and she was pregnant, okay? She wanted to end her life. And so I immediately had to get help for her because I'm not God, and I can't see through the phone, and I don't know. She sounded very sincere to me. So, I'm glad I made that phone call.
Yeah, well, here's what happened. When you are typically in most cities, mm-hmm. when you were in not so much high school but early college, and you were studying
mm-hmm.
pre-psychology or something like that, child development.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
A lot of us knew we needed to learn how to help people. When I was in college, I went and took crisis line training to be a crisis line volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
And you get that. Okay, and then a lot of your community centers have them. Excellent training for anybody who's going to do phone ministry. Because like you said, you have to know questions to ask. Are they just thinking what to ask? How to talk to them, dial 911 at the same time. And it's excellent because you sit with doing phone skills. Okay,
mm-hmm.
talking to people on the phone, not in person. And you get trained by therapists and stuff. And that is something that a lot of your survivors don't get. And it's not saying that you can't help people, but it is good to be trained in
mm-hmm.
how to do
Absolutely.
Telephone counseling. Because like
mm-hmm.
you said, if you got to call 911, you can't say,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, let me put you on hold while it, you know. And you have, and there were signals. So I got that training in college. The right crisis
mm-hmm.
lines in a lot of cities do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so the more training, which is education, that helpers of NASCA or anybody else who wants to help people, maybe you're just a church person and you want to help church people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the pastor can't always come to the telephone, okay? And his wife, usually they're not trained to deal with any of this. And they basically are just going to tell the person to call 911 anyway or
mm-hmm.
the suicide
mm-hmm.
line, okay? And
right.
so when you know you're trying, that you're supposed to be helping people, even like you do as a volunteer,
mm-hmm.
educating yourself, on variety. You stay very well informed on topics so that you are knowledgeable and can talk to people. And I hope mostly that, you know, a lot of your victims tell their story. Well, that doesn't help a lot of people. It really re-triggers them going through all that trauma, all that stuff, you know. That, and if somebody, most of the time, they just, they got their own heavy stories that they want either to tell or, can you get me out of this? It's like a lot of, you don't go into a therapy session and you just, and you're having family problems. You don't sit there and tell that client all about your family history. And they have to sit there and listen to your problems when they've come there to help you. And you're supposed to be a listening ear, okay? And you're supposed to be taking notes when you're in that role. But seems to be a lot of survivors want to tell their story. Good way to do that, okay, is write a book, make a video. I weave my story and all my stuff into every video. I tell them my personal stories that I have dealt with in relationship to the topic that I am talking about. And but it's always short. And at the same time, everybody has different experiences. Some people, they're not going to get educated. They're not going to volunteer. They aren't going to, you know, do this or do that. And some people do enjoy hearing stories about other people. And they go, well, that was a nice story, but that's your story and your truth. That's not my story or my truth. I didn't live what you lived. I lived something else. Okay? And they're just listening to some. So you have to learn to, when somebody calls for help, your stuff is sits on the back burner. And some people, you know, in support groups, I did those. I don't like them, okay, because it's just, we're going to sit around here and everybody's going to tell their story. We're all going to feel sorry for you. We're all going to leave and nothing happened. No prayers for healing. No education came out, you know, and no techniques were given about how you deal with it. It's just, how do you feel about that? How does that make you feel?
That's annoying, though. You know, that's truly annoying. Because when therapists, excuse me for interrupting a little bit, but I've seen that happen.
I don't like it either.
I was in a situation where I started doing that, and I go, oh, no, that's not how you work with people. Okay?
No, ma'am. And reason
it's right
is
get,
feelings.
No.
Well, feelings control, this is where helpers have to understand the role of the biological body and thoughts and feelings, and how, and that the best way it is, was always explained to me, is if my eyes look at a outlet on the wall and I see smoke and fire coming out, my eyes are seeing something. Nanoseconds later, I have a thought. I either got to go put it out or run away to be safe. Something has to happen. In those nanoseconds from that thought, from my eyes seeing something, my biological body goes into a fight or flight syndrome. Cortisol is released, hormones released, sugars released, stomach stops showing up. Because my physical body, I have told it, has to do something here. And people don't understand, your feelings are very important and they are very controlling of the body. Have you dealt much with biofeedback, Carol? Okay, people can lower by what they think, their heart rate. They can affect their biological body by their thoughts. So when you're in therapy, thinking changes with education. Oh, when I had that memory, it brought back my biological body, my brain, the hormones, the adrenaline, the cortisol from the emotions and stuff like that. And I was right back in it, all from a memory. Well, what are memories? Where are they stored in the brain? They're chemical, electrical. They're stored somewhere. And it's connected. So education and healing is important for the healer. Like what you do is you get information that helps educate.
Right.
Then you have so much more now, so when you're helping people, you don't have to ask a lot of questions. Oh, I got a male on the line. How old are you? Okay, I already know about that age bracket. Okay, so... And it's
I think everyone should do that. If we're going to, if we're going to work with people, we have to have what to work with. We need our own tools to work with, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that's why I do that. Because sometimes, people get sick, whatever, something bad happens to the family and they can't make the show, they make it for the following week. Well, you have to have something to talk about, So I do a lot of reference work, and I knew you'd be here tonight. But we were looking for a topic, so because of all the things I go through with the people during the week, actually can happen any day during the week, it was a topic to think about. Because right now people, you said so many things, okay, like going back to the hormonal with women, that's another thing, that we're so different than men. Because we do have the hormonal problems. And I'm dealing with a couple of women right now who are having all kinds of tests to see what their levels are, see if they're lacking here or have too much of this there, whatever, because of their mood swing changes, okay? The mood swing changes. Women are so different than men.
Well, men have the testosterone, and they have hormones, and they have a thyroid, and, okay, and typically a lot of healers don't ask those kind of questions. Are you, have you had a thorough blood work? Are you diabetic? What age? I'm trying to tell people, hey, what a lot of young girls, I said, look, when you go through the change of life, you gain weight. Your hormones change. And you can have postmenopausal depression, okay, because hormones are changing. When your hair goes from a color, I had black hair, now I got gray, beautiful silver hair. When your hormones are changing and chemicals, your hair color changes, okay? Your blood, and if you had too much sugar in there, or and people sometimes, feelings, people are emotional eaters, and they don't realize it. And they are trying to comfort themselves through food. Some of them go bingo to be happy, the football game. And they don't like to be alone with themselves. And so as a helper, you're doing the right thing by educating yourself. Then you're educating NASCA listeners by what you have learned.
Right.
And see, therapists don't do that.
No, they won't.
Because they don't really want the patient to be educated. You're a psychiatrist. You believe that everything is biological, chemical. And medicine solves that chemical imbalance that's causing you to have what they call stinking thinking. So if we can balance out your brain's neurochemical, this is psychiatrist, or if you have a thyroid that's acting up, okay, or your sugar's not balanced, that's his job. We get everything balanced through medication. Now you'll be able to think better, make decisions instead of what you've been making.
Right.
And, some people do need the court. If you got into the family court, abused parents of children, they would be court-ordered to take parenting classes. I used to teach them. They know nothing about child development, nothing about child nutrition, They know nothing about cognitive development, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They just, you know, nothing. So they would put them through court order a 6 or 8 week class. It was just the beginning. And they know a lot of parents don't know how to clean a house, cook good meals. So they have family social workers drop by and check on the kids. Lack of education. So you're dealing with culture. You're dealing with traditions. You're dealing with, we'll say, even religion. You're dealing with lack of education and knowledge about a lot of things. And so you have, we'll call them uneducated victims. And if you got traumatized as a child, your learning can actually be stymied. You just cannot learn. So you don't learn the reading, math, and spelling. Education, it's not fun. And but to some kids, school was a safety because you're away from a house. But if you have trauma, it will actually build neurons, biological things in the brain can actually get perverted and twisted. Cortisol is running through there. Fear hormones are running through there. They do damage to the little developing brain. If you get hit, you know, with hands. And when sexual abuse comes to children, okay, and what occurs is the most powerful form of rejection. The little person somehow knows that's not what a mama or a daddy is supposed to do, or a brother. Love gets twisted. Fear comes in. The cortisol, the hormones, everything's kicked in. Nerves that shouldn't have been turned on. And this is how you love me. Now everything starts in thought, gets twisted, perverted, and but yet they're not at peace. And a lot of people don't understand the whole system of the biological body, the thoughts, their education level, their feelings, and how all that works together in not only building a post-traumatic brain, so to speak, okay, or personality that's easily triggered. And you could have a trigger by a smell, your five senses, okay, and or a, you know, the five senses do the triggering. Maybe the abuser wore a certain color shirt, or a certain song was playing, or at a certain time of the night, you know, you wake up in the middle of the night. So our senses bring the triggers. And a skilled healer knows all that, doesn't usually have to ask a lot of questions, doesn't have to usually hear the story in great detail. You know, they've already read the stories in other biological books. For a person to tell their story, over and over and over, it sort of re-traumatizes those. They live in those thoughts and those feelings again. Nothing gets resolved. So it's difficult for some helping people to help other people. Has John come back on yet?
No, he hasn't. But I want to say something to this. Okay, I'm soaking in everything that you say. Now, according to the specialist, I forget his name, but it's a foundation, and I kind of like it. It's www.healthmyptsd.com. And the way that they look at it with the post-traumatic stress disorder issues is that people should explore, to explore the feelings that they're having, the sense of their PTSD when they're having episodes. And that, by doing that time after time after time, like many people will have nightmares. And many times it's the same nightmare, okay? It doesn't always change. It's a lot of times the same thing. So then to explore that, And the way that they see it is that the more you look at it, you learn to desensitize it, or it becomes desensitized, I should say.
I would call that a theory. That is their belief. Okay, and how you desensitize it means it's still there. You're just not as sensitive to it. Because you have, it would sort of be like, you love chocolate cake. Let's sit down and every single meal we're going to eat a whole chocolate cake. And then eventually it'll be there on the table, but you just don't want to eat it anymore. Desensitize it. But it's not gone away. You're not healed.
Right.
You're just desensitized. It doesn't affect you. That, and I would say that is one theory. Then you go to another group of people, and they'll deal with it another theoretical way.
Right.
Okay? And then you go to another group of people, and they'll deal with it another theoretical way. Okay.
Well, I think that's why people have to try different things. So, I believe that. Yeah.
Okay. Now, is from my mental health training, they always would say, look, to the patient, you may not fit with every therapist that you, it's like finding your doctor that you and the doctor have a rapport with, that you feel safe with. He or she understands you. You can ask questions. So find you a therapist that you feel safe with, that understands, that had training in what, you want some help, okay? And each therapist goes to different schools of thought, okay? And so a lot of people, if you go to an older doctor, he may do things the way he did it 30 years ago, but they've changed.
Right.
They've got some new medical techniques or medicine, but he doesn't do that. You just like the guy. You're comfortable. So therapy is the same way. You have, as a spiritual teacher, when somebody's having these problems, I go to God and say, what's up? What is the root cause of this? Is it biological? Could be. Is it biological and memory and feelings, thoughts? Could be. Okay, if they don't like themselves when they feel themselves, life is hopeless. Why, God? What happened? Okay? In the spiritual realm, I go to the source that knows everything. And I ask them questions, okay? And I get counsel, okay? I get counsel. How do you want to help them? Now, I may not tell that person that himself because they may not believe in it. So when somebody's had a trauma, there are many different ways, many different religious ways, many different formats of treatment and therapy that they can attempt to try. Some have been allowed into the medical profession, and some haven't. Some, acupuncture with needles. Okay. Some of it's going to the gym, losing weight. Some of it's medication. Some of it's a particular therapy, talk way. Some do it with hypnosis. Oh, that solved my problem. They just hypnotized me. That solved it. That's wonderful. Okay?
Well, that's just it right there. Let me say something about that. See, people do try different things. There's something that's called intrusive re-experiencing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know what that means, and I know what that means.
Yep.
And so people with PTSD frequently feel as if the trauma is happening again and again. And this is sometimes called flashbacks. Okay, they have flashbacks. The reliving experiences or, all kinds of things.
Right.
The person may have intrusive pictures in his or her head about the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
a lot of times they have recurrent nightmares, like I just said, or
yep,
may even
yep.
experience hallucinations
okay,
about the trauma.
Okay, now, what would you tell that person? I would say, sweetie, there's not peace inside of your system. Something
mm-hmm.
has not been healed nor resolved. Okay?
That's
it's
right.
And your memories are trying to tell you there's something wrong with your thinking, your feeling, your biological body. Okay? And usually that's what post-traumatic stress is. Now, if you understand how the soul works and the spirit works, when
mm-hmm.
bad things happen, it affects your soul because the soul really doesn't want to be hurt. It wants love, peace, joy, acceptance. And when
that's
that
right.
gets disrupted at any age, especially in the young, love bonds are not formed. So the flashbacks
mm-hmm.
is the body's way of saying something happened to you that's not healed. It's sort of like when you get cancer. I know you probably
mm-hmm.
never had it. I never had it either. And you go into remission for a little while. And then it comes back. And you have to go through another round, okay? And it goes into remission again.
Yeah, we're going
and
through that in my family right now. Go ahead.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
what post-traumatic stress is. Things go into remission.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still there. Okay. Because there has
well,
to be
all right, let's
of
let's
it.
Stop for a minute because I know John is back. But one thing I want to get clear here too. For example, many times, you know, later on, a child abuse may be hiding and trembling in a closet. People can actually regress if they don't, you know, look at the problem and then find ways to solve the problem and regress. They'll actually this is one case here that I'm looking at, where a person was seen and found inside of a closet, trembling,
mm-hmm.
feeling threatened, even if the perceived threat is not abuse-related, but also,
happened. That is
real
easy. What occurs is during the abuse,
mm-hmm.
in order to survive it emotionally,
right.
the biological brain and the soul and the spirit are able to create individuals. It's called disassociation.
Mm-hmm.
And in
mm-hmm.
therapy, those people who study that, they know it's a defense mechanism. People
mm-hmm.
have out-of-body experiences, but somebody goes through
yes,
the trauma.
They
create
mm-hmm.
a person. And when they get triggered, that person that went through the trauma or the after effects, it's a multiple
mm-hmm.
personality, gets triggered, it comes up, they are in that. I have had ladies live with me. I go into their bedroom, they under the bed. And I said,
mm-hmm.
honey, what are you doing under there? Well, I'm naked. She wasn't. But a little child had come up, and she was hiding. I said, well, can I help you? No, you can't. I don't have any clothes on. Now, she had clothes on. She was back in that dissociative state. So what did
that's
I
a
do?
Dissociation. That's a dissociation.
Yes.
That's
and
exactly
that
what I have right in front of me.
Yes.
I'm going to read this one sentence
phone?
Here.
Okay.
I just want to read this
phone?
One here because you and I know what this is, but it says, it's not, I'll tell you, we know that. All right, numbing of thoughts and feelings in response to trauma is known as dissociation and is the hallmark of PTSD. Also,
mm-hmm.
people will do things in avoidance. Now, avoidance
yes.
means people with PTSD work hard to avoid anything that might remind them of the traumatic experience.
Mm-hmm.
They may try
yep.
to avoid people, places, or things and that
mm-hmm.
are reminders, as well as numbing out emotions to avoid.
Sure, you would avoid because in all sorts of ways. In
mm-hmm.
a lot of young cases, little girls will eat a lot of food to get fat, thinking, maybe I won't be so sexually attractive. Some
That's
little
right.
girls go, "I'll if I become a boy, I won't be so sexually attracted. I'll be on the winning
That's right.
side." So they become a boy, they cut their hair, they dress, okay. All kind, and mm-hmm. therapists have to know it is the mind's way of protecting itself, dealing with the trauma. It's a protective in mental health world. Now, psychologists, the PhDs, a few
That's
of
right.
them study this and post-traumatic stress. Your master's level, your bachelor's level, your average foster parent, a social worker, they don't.
No, they don't.
They're not. They don't study this, only at a higher
mm-hmm.
level.
That's
and
right.
it is, can be from any kind of trauma, war trauma. You'll see that people having nightmares still thinking they're in, you know, the spirit's been so affected by the trauma and the war, they're having dreams about it. It's
mm-hmm.
something that is not there yet. It's not been resolved. It's trying to come out. It's sort of like it's trying to lance itself, get the poison out, but it's been pushed down. You know, hidden away by either drugs or trauma, fear. And it's trying to, the system, okay, its mind and body and spirit, it's trying to get it out of itself. It's trying to release it. But it's, you know,
right.
very traumatic. And
yet
when
it's
that,
very necessary if they're going to heal.
Yes, yes.
Okay, yes.
But
and then also, too.
Girl,
Yeah.
When that young girl was in my house under my under a bed,
right.
the part, we call it the part, it had no clothes on in her mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, here, let me get you some clothes. And I kind of put my hand under the bed and she, okay, and now it could come out. I had mm-hmm. to learn to live with people with multiple personalities, okay, and I had to, and I was thrown into this because that's who I was to be working with. And it happens. It's a creative, mental health knows it's defensive. PTSD is a way mm-hmm. of protecting when you have to do things you don't want to do, things are done to you. Some people can handle it, bury it, it's gone. We ain't no talking about it. Out of your World War II, we ain't going to talk about it. We're never going to speak of it. It's buried and get on with life. It was war and that was it. Other people can't do that. And so
that's right.
Let John.
You're right. There's two groups there, two categories. I want John to speak in a minute because he said he suffers from PTSD. But you're quite right. As far as I can see, like with me, I had the terrible nightmares. Okay, and finally, I said something really nasty to it, to the nightmares, and they went away. And I never had another one again. I had to get more angry, and I fought my nightmares with my own anger, and they didn't come back. Now, John, I know you're there. Are you still there?
Yes. Yes,
okay.
I am.
You had mentioned earlier that you are still having problems, say, with PTSD. You want to talk a little mm-hmm. bit about it?
Yes, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Pastor Deborah, really, that is such a beautiful way to describe, you know, what PTSD is about. You know, along with that, too, is that I'd like to add a lot of things with this, is that, you know, having PTSD to a certain degree of a level of PTSD comes into play with a lot of people, okay? And it depends on, you know, the extent of a lot of the trauma that's involved. However, a person that gets triggered, okay, by such an event, you know, that is at that level that they get set off on is exactly what Pastor Deborah was describing as. You know, there is a chemical imbalance in the brain that gets triggered. When this happens, that, you know, people can become the person that they've tried to get to being, you know, a victim of excessive childhood sex abuse that they try to get away from, okay? And when this happens, it can be very, very devastating to an individual or family of any kind, even people that do what we do for a living by, you know, supporting other individuals. And with that, you know, you really have to think about something, is that when I'm experiencing PTSD, is that how do I recognize that I am going to possibly get triggered over this? Or am I going to be able to handle it the way I did last time when I got triggered, okay? So for me, I was just hospitalized, okay? I didn't tell many people. I was in a hospital for 4 days, okay, over being triggered. You know, I deal with people just like you, Carol, every single day of my life, okay? This is a full-time job. I was triggered by three separate situations that hit me all at one time, basically. I was overwhelmed, you know, by the confusion that I was living in at the moment. And I went and got help, though, okay? And this is what I'm getting at, is that I think that each person that has a situation to deal with PTSD, they should get help immediately, okay? But how do they do that? Where do they go? Okay, and I hate to say this, but it does take experience to even know what to do there. You know, the biggest part of me helping other people is that I'm in the same boat, okay? I know what it's like. Carol knows what it's like. We all know what it's like. And I found more and more support out of people that have experienced the same close to some of the same abuse that I did, you know. And it's like one of these things where it takes one to know one kind of thing, okay? However, there is a different side to that, okay, is that, you know, when I first was diagnosed back in 2013, okay, it took an extensive test to really find out, you know, how severe my PTSD was, and it was off the charts, you know. Since then, I've learned, you know, how to deal with certain things with PTSD. I've learned how to probably more listen to people just like you, Pastor Deborah and Carol, both of you, that you can't do this by yourself, number one. Secondly, you're not alone, number two. And thirdly, is that the best thing you can ever do in your life is to reach out and ask for help, because it will change your life if you just do that. People think they're strong enough to override it, get through it, you know. And in fact, it can harm you even worse, okay, if you do not. Here's the thing, is that I have personally seen some people reach out to as many, I'd say probably as anywhere from like 8 to 12 different therapists, okay, before they found someone that they could, you know, use that word that we really run from, is trust, you know. It could be the least person you think, but if that person touches you in a way that they are full of empathy, okay, for you, that's the one. It may take a while to find, you know, but it doesn't mean that they have to be this psychotherapist with 5 master degrees, and, you know, that's not what it's about. It's about what your heart tells you. It's about what you feel, you know. And a lot of times I find that even these therapists have been abuse victims themselves, okay. So, you know, that's my opinion on this situation, is that the trauma that you endure also, and I want to leave you with this, is that, you know, there are many, many serious, okay, when I say serious, I mean life-threatening physical issues that come with this. And there is a term for what happened to a lot of abuse victims, sexual abuse victims, and you're talking about the soul. It's called the murdered soul. And I learned that from a woman by the name of Vicki Franks-Reich. She has a book, Her Son Adam Committed Suicide, and this is in that book. And you know, I look at it that way. and it's very truthful. It's head on correct, and truly, you know, basically, if you really want to get down to it, it's a form of brain damage. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's I don't know if I'd go as far as brain damage. It's certainly wounded. It's the wounded soul and the wounded brain. But it can be worked with if dealt with the proper people or person, you know, if you find a good enough therapist. Some people, there's all different ways that people get help. Some don't want to go to a therapist. Some use yoga. But I believe that you have to have more assistance than with yoga. That's just my opinion, okay? It may be good for calming a person down, and maybe they can get more in touch with their feelings because they clear their mind. And now I have a very flighty mind. I don't think I could ever do yoga because my mind is always going brrr, like that, okay? I'm thinking,
well,
thinking.
How do y'all feel
which
about
is very
Medicaid?
Exhausting. That's very
how do you
exhausting.
Feel about when it comes to this?
Oh, I've spoken to doctors about that, and they don't feel that I actually need medication. What I need to do is to learn just simply to slow myself down, and they think that I'm capable of doing that. And sometimes I take a few days break, and I can do that. It's all right to do that, by the way, and because it gives you time to reflect on yourself. You see, if we don't reflect on ourselves and our own personal needs, like, Pastor Deborah was speaking about, you know, to have our blood levels checked and all this other stuff. Maybe we're eating too much sugar. I am a sugar addict, okay? I am a sugar addict. And that's why my brain goes, brr, so I know I have to cut back on the sugar. So, Deborah, I understand what you're talking about there. Halloween, I had a blast, okay? I made sure that I bought more candy than I needed. All right, well, oh boy. So it kept me going, but my mind needed a break, okay? So there is something to be said for that. You know, it's symptoms of psychological, all right, arousal are very distinctive also, and that's what I'm speaking about a little bit, even with myself, and people with PTSD. Now, I say that I don't have it anymore. I don't have it to the extent that I had it at one time because I was in the avoidance stage. I would, you know, stay away from people or I'd have to get drunk first. Now, that's more like what the men were doing, what we were speaking about earlier, Pastor. I was more into the alcohol, using that Band-Aid, okay, because I'm a funny person. I've always been funny. And, you know, when I get drunk or when I did, I was still funny. I didn't hurt people. I was hurting myself because I wasn't facing. I was running away from, okay, running away from the things that people run away from who suffer from PTSD because you don't want to have those feelings, the feelings of being not quite there. You walk into a room, and there's 25, 50 people, whatever, and you feel different. That feeling of feeling different. You feel like your body isn't real. That's a part of PTSD, okay? These are things that I used to go through. Maybe even feeling lesser than the people that were in the room. Maybe I might feel, and I know better than this now, but I felt like I wasn't as intelligent maybe as they were or whatever. There was so much things I had to get over. Because when we're children being brought up in a dysfunctional home, we're told we're stupid. We come to believe it if you're young enough. And that's something you develop in the developmental stages, which is what Pastor David was speaking, or David, listen to me, Pastor Deborah was speaking about at one point, was the childhood behavioral, okay? If you have a child who's like 4 years old and their mind is still developing and all these other stuff and they're looking to mommy for nurturing and daddy for whatever, loving, you know, the thing that a father's supposed to do. Well, I didn't really have a father, so, you know. But the point is, you know, the guidance that a child needs, if you don't have that, okay, you're bringing yourself up. And if you're always being told that you're stupid, you're never going to amount to anything. And on and on and on it goes, as usually are the two cases right there. Or maybe with a girl you're not pretty enough, or with a guy you're funny looking. These things that are thrown at children. We tend to just want to, you know, implode. We want to go, not explode, we want to implode. We want to disappear. Or as Robert used to say, wasn't that his name, Robert, I think? Wallpaper on the wall. I don't know if you remember him or not, John. But we had a guy on that he said he felt like wallpaper because he was an object. Yeah, he wasn't a person. He was an object. And he couldn't speak at the table or anything else like that because he had nothing to say, did he? Because anything that he had to say was not going to be intelligent or was going to have nothing to do with nothing. So he was like wallpaper. And when you grow up in homes like that where people make you so less than, then you have to reach a point in your life where, and that can only come through therapy. I had therapy too. Mine was through the church. It happened to work with me. And that's how I felt or found out that I wasn't stupid. That was the best high I ever had. It gave me all this battery of tests. So anyway, what you said, Pastor Deborah, about us being, you know, drawn, you know, when we go out and look for work, you know, in areas of the life that we feel comfortable. Okay, I was a juvenile delinquent. So what did I do? I worked at juvenile delinquents. I didn't have to learn too much, did I? Okay. And I feel that's pretty good. And I did very well. But I had to move. I had two children. I had to go where the money was, okay? So then I learned other things at other places that I worked at detox. Well, heck, I know about that, don't I? And I wasn't honest with them. I didn't tell them I was an alcoholic. They wouldn't have hired me if they knew I was an alcoholic. Sometimes we hide our things, okay? We don't want people to know we're alcoholics. I certainly didn't. So I'd wait for the sun to go down. My kids are well taken care of. They've been fed. Their homework is done. They can watch TV for a little while. And I'm right downstairs at the bottom of the apartment steps that I had been living at. So I was certainly right there. And they were a little bit older. But, you know, the point is, you know, me, an alcoholic, I didn't look at myself because I was a functioning alcoholic, okay? I took care of my children, and I had a good job. I was working detention, all right? So, you know, and then I was working at detox after that, and then another detox, and on it went. But it was always with social services. I've been fingerprinted all over New Jersey, for God's sake. I can't do anything bad because my fingerprints are everywhere, okay? But the jobs that I took, they sent me to school, John, me, Miss Panic Child.
Yeah.
I had my flask in my back pocket because I still had panic attacks, but I went to school.
Right.
All right? All right. So, okay. So I have many certificates because of that. But I kept moving and moving, and quite honestly
and,
with you.
And you had your medicine in your back suit.
That's right. See, this is what we do. This is what we do. And we were talking about that earlier. But finally I got to the point, I started in the 70s working with, you know, jobs like that up until the mid-90s. And I saw so much garbage going on in these organizations that I got sick of it. I did.
Mm-hmm.
I got sick of it. And I became a landlady. And let me tell you something. My husband and I bought properties, my second husband and I. And you know what? I learned a lot about people that way, too. I was a landlady. And you can have bad tenants and you can have good tenants. And I also learned, too, that a lot of those people had been abused, many of them. And so you go through different stages in your life and with different people, and you realize that many people have been abused. It's how we handle it. And, yes, we do need help. And there's no shame in that. There's no blame in that. That shame goes to the abuser. That's where it goes, okay, the person that abuses or the people that abuses. And whether it's one time or over 100 times, it doesn't matter because, you see, the crime was committed. And trauma is trauma. So we do, just as, you know, as Pastor Deborah was saying and is saying, we tend to many times gravitate towards people that we knew from the past. I still have some friends from the past. And also with jobs, we gravitate towards jobs. This is why I do so much research. All right?
Yeah.
I have all this paperwork in front of me with PTSD to understand even more. So You're right on. You're spot on, Pastor, with what you were saying. I just wanted you to know that. I just wanted to give a little bit. Go ahead.
For Pastor Deborah.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, dealing with what we're talking about, last night I was on another show, okay? It's called Mask Off Mondays with Dr. Lena Clark and Dr. Larry Carr. They are NASCA family members, so to speak, but they have their own thing. Well, you know, last night we talked about that same thing with me and dialing in on trying to release that little boy, you know, that's in me that was abused, and
uh-huh.
and to stop running away and to try to, you know, let that abused boy go forever, you know.
It's easy to do.
And this is what they do. And I tell you, I woke up this morning, I just felt like a wonderful person. You know, I felt beautiful. I felt loved. I felt relieved, you know, because
uh-huh.
I don't think I ever really touched on that in such a way that I did last night. You know, even though I know it's been there for 45 years, I don't think even my own therapist that I've always had, you know, never really touched back on that specific thing of letting that little boy go, you know. So how do you feel about that?
I've done a lot of that with people. I've worked with some very seriously abused, coming out of satanic ritual abuse, and
mm-hmm.
How they do it, it's done two ways, okay? There's the therapeutic mental health psychology way, of first recognizing you have little boys, little girls, and
mm-hmm.
they need peace. And some people do it like, hey, if you watch Sybil movie, first you got to meet them. Then in the therapy world, they try to figure out that little boy. What trauma did he take? What feelings is he holding? What memories? And maybe you got a little girl and you got little babies that can't even talk. Who's holding what? So they try to do that first, sort of mapping what's going on inside of your thoughts and memories. And they have different ways of letting go. Some of them try to integrate all of them into one. So it's like they look at it that little boy is part of you. It's been disassociated, fragmented out. Well, we need to bring him back into the big grown-up you, bring his memories, his thoughts, his feelings back in so he's not out
mm-hmm.
there alone, okay?
Right.
I mean, I don't do it this way, okay? And usually a lot of that says the medical community and psychologists, so that might take 6 or 7 years to work through
mm-hmm.
that system, develop it, find out who's there, journal it, and then a lot of times it's done under hypnosis. Sometimes it's, you know, done just through, I can't think of the word, imagery. But what they believe mm-hmm. is you have to integrate that some of your feelings are split off over there, and they're being held in that little boy.
Right.
And we need to bring that back into you so that the big you sort of brings home that little boy, and the little boy sort of becomes you, sort of integration. And
right.
Okay, and so a lot of therapy, I understand how to do that. It's you're sort of letting go with the little boy, but he becomes you, and you have full memory of all the stuff that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of okay, as a pastor, God had to teach me he doesn't do it that way. He
right.
does it a different way. And the
right.
different way is that you would say that little boy needs healing
mm-hmm.
and he needs to go and be with Jesus. And Jesus
right.
wants to take him, and I
mm-hmm.
usually do a prayer, and they go off,
mm-hmm.
and they're gone.
Well, that's
and then you wake
night.
Up the next day, and what mm-hmm. happens is part of your personality is healed. Not all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You might just have a little more
mm-hmm.
peace. And it's
yeah.
done that way. But some people do it. It's done all sorts of ways. It's
mm-hmm.
called integration. And
right.
it's okay. And some people, like I said, mental health, psychology, therapy,
mm-hmm.
they know how to do this. Okay, they understand. Right. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say was that, you know, exactly what you're talking about happened last night, okay, and that for you, you know, you can go into Dr. Lena Clark's page or even mine on Facebook and see the show, okay, so you can fast forward it just to see, but yeah, that's exactly what happened last night, you know, it was that way, and I got a lot out of it, I really did. You know, I have to say that that's positive.
Well, typically, here's what happens. When you recognize there is a part, is what we call them, that you've created, and usually that little part, at however the age, it experienced something at that age. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is you can have protector parts that protect a small you, and they're on call 24/7. They're very tired. And they have to give way to another protector. I've done that. I've worked with little parts that are babies, can't even talk. Big ones, the ones that think they're dogs or animals. Because sometimes, like the person who said he was wallpaper, in order for him to survive the trauma, he got up on the wall. If I'm a wallpaper, nobody can hurt me. Okay. And he has a part that's called wallpaper. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's how that part lives. So what the first part of healing is, you have to, you may not know that it's there, but a true therapist, oh, we got a part named wallpaper. You say, wallpaper, would you like to just heal and, you know, and maybe have the life that you never thought you could have, wallpaper? And just go be a kid and play and run and have fun, whatever the age is. And wallpaper might give you a smile or a, you know, just a nod of the head. And then in spirit, and with me and God, you would just say, dear Father, wallpaper needs to go and be with you and play and have a life and be free and healed. Make it so in the name of Jesus. Boom, it's gone. And then you wake up the next day and it's like you feel different. Now, that doesn't happen in therapy because there's not a lot of prayer. But they do do integration, okay?
Yeah.
They know that works, okay?
Yeah.
But a lot of therapists believe that you have to take all that trauma back into one person. They adult you. And so you have every memory of every thought, of everything about it. And you remember everything, and but you're not disassociated anymore. And they call that healing. So it's vital
right.
that when you're trying to get healed and people that you choose to submit your brokenness to, your woundedness to, that, you know, they know what they're doing. And that they are, because let me tell you, it can also be done with the bad stuff, evil spirit stuff. Okay, the
right.
enemy is out there, and he can take the stuff, and you think it's gone, but you in some bad hands. And so you don't give yourself into be healed. You may not want to go to a snake oil salesman for a cancer treatment. You may not want to go to a doctor that's lost their license or never treated what you think you have. You might want second opinions. Giving your soul, your mind, your feelings, your woundedness, you have to be very careful in who you entrust that with. Because they can take spiritual advantage of you. They can implant things, take things, put things in, all kinds of things that go on, unseen world. And so that's my counsel. I only got 2 minutes left, so leave it with that. You can get in touch with me. I think it's on the NASCA thing, my phone number or something, because it's people need healing. Carol will tell you that. And PTSD is the top of the line. Okay. And,
okay.
All right.
Thank
you.
According to this.
Go ahead.
I just got the cue. Hold on a second. I'm going to be cut off in a minute. Not even a minute. We've got 60 seconds, not even. Yeah, absolutely. Pastor Deborah is on right on Facebook, right on our NASCA Facebook also, and she you can contact her. So this is a good show because we spoke about PTSD, and there's a lot more to even speak about PTSD, but we got in pretty much a lot of information about PTSD, and if you need any help with that. Yeah, well, and I have a lot of knowledge about it, and of course, you know, I want to call a doctor too. Pastor Deborah has tons of it. Okay, we're going to have to end the show now because I have to shut it down. But I want to thank you very much for coming on, Pastor Deborah, and
yes.
Because you do have so much knowledge, and I thank you for that. So good night, John. Tomorrow I'll be interviewing you. And we'll have
yes.
a very good show also. So we had a good show tonight. Thank you so much. And good night, everyone, and take care. God bless.
Good night.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was-